following contains language of a frank and explicit nature. Discretion is advised.
This is Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Bernie Siplicki.
The two of you were under restraining orders to stay away from each other.
You're going to get it now.
Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmentally responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models, specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Top Hat Entertainment, helping you with all your party needs, from DJs to inflatables. They have it all. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining the right mortgage can be. And Romanto's Pizza, delivering within a 10-mile radius of Taft Corners.
Taft Corners is in Williston.
Try them for your next wing order, too. 879-1000.
You need to start throwing bombs, baby!
This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN.
Living the dream, baby, living the dream.
Going past Wilkins, putting it up, and it falls!
Right now the Retrievers have to be value the basketball, value the possession.
Lyles.
Oh, can't miss. Shock and awe. In college basketball, UMBC makes history in Charlotte.
We are living the dream and taking you with us. It's Sports Saturday, and thank you, boys, for just putting your finger right in the wound. Like, I didn't see that coming a mile away. You know, you come in here all soft on me, and everyone's being so kind to me, the caring arm, and as soon as we go public, baby, you're just like everybody else I know for the last 12 hours giving me the business, because the UMBC Retrievers went into the NCAA tournament, the 16 seed, a team that people could not believe got in this tournament. I was sitting courtside. Bernie, you were courtside last week as UMBC knocked off Vermont, and we were both stunned that Vermont even allowed that to happen. But this UMBC team went into this tournament and knocked off the number one team in the nation and broke my heart last night, the Virginia Cavaliers, and hats off to them, Bernie, hats off.
Oh, where do we begin, Jeff?
I don't know.
You know, last Saturday we were having a wonderful time, and want to thank UVM for allowing us to do our show at FanFest, and we'll get into that later.
Right.
And then Jarius Lyles rips our heart out, and we're devastated, and then UMBC pops up against Virginia, and I'm sitting there going, this is the only time in my life I'm going to cheer for with Jeff Paul and cheer for Virginia, because I wanted UMBC to lose.
Yeah.
And, you know, I vowed I wasn't going to really watch the game. And so the first half goes through and people are like, yo. And I'm like, I'm not doing it. So I'm watching other games and I see the ticker and I flip it over. And I was actually like being nice to you.
You were actually helping me at a time of major distress for me.
And then, UMBC just put together 20 minutes of unbelievable offensive basketball
shot
in the second half.
Shot 68% in the second half, and actually they out-Virginia'd Virginia. I've never seen this UVA team, and I would say, and I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm an expert, I would say that I'm as close to an expert on UVA as you can be from 1,000 miles away. I have never seen a Virginia team get dominated like that in the last 7 or 8 years. I mean, maybe against Florida last year where they were really outmanned in the second round of the tournament, but nothing like this. They couldn't defend them. UMBC was in front of them the whole time. Hats off to what Coach Odom has done with that program. I mean, and I would say this, if UMBC plays the way they did against Virginia tomorrow, they're going to beat Kansas State too. I mean, those kids were very special yesterday, and I have the utmost respect for what they did. I truly thought that what happened against Vermont was more about what Vermont didn't do than what UMBC did do. And last night it was more about what UMBC did and what Virginia did not do.
Just, again, unreal. Jarius Lyle was unbelievable. Sherburne.
Really was unbelievable.
KJ Mara. I mean, those guys just, they played great. And I mean, they scored 53 points in the second half, and that's what Virginia gives up for the game.
Yeah.
I mean, let's not kid ourselves. And I mean, the spread in that half was I think, or the spread in that game was 20, and UMBC almost covered it the other way.
Yeah,
I mean, it was just wild. The second biggest, upset by point spread in the 64 team field history. Just an amazing night. And that's what, you know, and I half-heartedly apologize. That's what makes this tournament so special. And that's why it's the greatest event there can be.
655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation today. We are Sports Saturday here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. You can also join us on our text line if you don't want to call us and talk to us. You can text us. That's what the kids are doing now, Bernie, at 802-655-6672. So, you know, I guess what it comes down to for me is it's very disappointing as a Virginia fan, but obviously very exciting for the NCAA tournament. I'm sorry, yes.
What do we got for the show today more than just our, you know,
oh, gee, we got all kinds sadness. Of stuff. Oh, you're not sad. You two clowns aren't sad. I'm sad. I'm the one that's depressed.
I can't believe it.
And here I am thinking that my two boys here, the two people that I thought would be, like, understand me the most, my radio family here that I think would come in and be very kind with me. And no, we got to stay, you know.
Can you believe Aaron did this on his own for a rookie?
Yes, he hangs out with you. He's been rubbing. Trust me, I don't think he did it on his own anyway. I promise you there was a call made last night or this morning saying you got to get this ready to go.
There was a text with 4 minutes left to go in the game. As I'm consoling you, I'm calling, texting him, you have to get three highlights on for when
we
start.
We do have a great show today. We'll get into this game more because I do want to talk about it, but Tara Sullivan's going to join us at 10:20. Tara Sullivan, who used to be with the Bergen Record, was a Giants beat writer, a Yankees beat writer, Mets beat writer, is now with the Boston Globe. So now she's leaving the New York sports scene for the Boston sports scene. It'll be great insight. She'll have some great insight on some of the moves the Giants have made and the Patriots have made, obviously. She went to the Olympics and covered the Olympics for the Boston Globe. One of the best guests we've ever had. I love talking to Tara. We're going to talk to her at 10:20.
Well, all I know is she better not jump ship from being a Giants fan to becoming a Patriots fan.
Well, that's going to be interesting to ask her because I know that whenever we talk to Tara, you can tell she's a fan of the Giants or the Yankees. You know, you can see that. It's going to be interesting to see what she's got to do. I don't know if I could do it. I mean, I don't know if I could jump ship like that. Of course, if they paid you a lot, I guess it's no problem. And then we're going to preview the Division I Boys Basketball Championship today, Bernie, at 10:40 with the Free Press's Austin Danforth. Rutland and Mount Mansfield, the defending champion Rutland, undefeated. A team that had not won a state championship since 1967, led by Butch Paul, of course, my father. We're very proud of that.
Yes,
very proud of that.
You should be.
But last year, Rutland wins the championship for the first time, and now they're undefeated and looking at their second in a row. That would be pretty amazing for a program like Rutland.
It would be, you know, just to be so close for the last 50 years and now in the last 2 years have a chance to go have the perfect season. But, you know, Mount Mansfield will be game, and Coach Jeff Davis will be ready to go for that Rutland team.
Yeah, there is no question. You got to give Jeff Davis and his kids a ton of credit for knocking off Rice, a team that I think a lot of people in the state feel was the best team in the state. Even though Rutland was undefeated, there were a lot of people that felt like Rice, when they were healthy, were the best team. And Jeff Davis, on the biggest stage, found a way to get it done.
Yeah, the three best teams, you know, pretty much from start to finish were Rice, Rutland and Mount Mansfield, and you know, the two of the three will be on display here this afternoon.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. So to get back to the big game last night, UMBC comes out and does a great job. We just have a question on the text line. What do you guys think the UMBC win does for their program in the America East? I think it does a lot for anybody's program. Anytime you win in the NCAA tournament, anytime you get to the NCAA tournament, if you're a low mid-major, it's going to be great for recruiting. And what does it do for the America East? I think it vindicates a little bit the America East. I think it gives them a little bit of clout. I think players that are trying to go to these institutions and these universities will have programs like Vermont. We've always kept Vermont as a cornerstone. I think Vermont, until this one, had the biggest win in the history of America East as they beat Syracuse back in 2003 or 2004, whatever year. What year was that? Five? Whatever year it was when they beat Syracuse. But this win against the number one team in the nation is definitely a bigger deal. And I think it does. I think it speaks volumes for the conference and for the university.
Again, I agree. And just to go in depth a little more, I think that with the new arena that UMBC has, that's going to be tremendously helpful. Again, I agree with the vindication of the league and how it's better. And again, you know, Jairus Lyles is a graduate senior. The best thing that Coach Odom did was re-recruit him back to UMBC. He could have went anywhere. He had a bunch of high major programs. And the message that Coach Odom gave him was, well, you want to show agents and people in Europe and stuff like that 10-minute breakdown clips here or there, or you want to show where, like, games where you where you make big plays and take people to another level. So
he took that team to another level.
Well, I mean, think about you know what he did. Obviously, he ripped all of our hearts out with a tremendous shot.
I do have to say, when that shot went in, I don't know if you remember me because you were like, I mean, you were on the radio, but you looked at me and I looked at you, and you were white. You were like pale. I was like, I hope my buddy over there is okay.
Yeah.
But again, a dagger. And I mean, in a cold-hearted dagger. I was sitting with a guy that I was sitting with that said to me, he's like, when the game was, you know, that UVM game was so, it was just an uncomfortable game.
Of course.
You remember, you're there. They couldn't stretch it longer than 9 points. They just weren't in a flow. A lot of the same things that UMBC did to Vermont, they did to Virginia. So, you know, you saw that on a national stage last night. But he did say to me, he said, I'd hate to have the game in his hands with a couple seconds left. And when he was walking that ball up, I looked at him and said, well, here we go, because it's going
to
happen.
And how many times did we say last Saturday, you know, Lyles has the ability to go off and take care of business. And last night, you know, 28 points on what, 11 shots?
It's amazing. It truly is.
That's pretty good.
It is. It's very good. And it speaks volumes to them. And I think it speaks volumes to Odom. I mean, I got to tell you, I was impressed with him. I watch coaches especially with big time coaches when you get these games. And you can relate to this, Bernie. You played big time basketball. When I'm at these big games, when I was at the UVM UMBC game and being able to be that close to the court, watching Odom work was very impressive. I was always very impressed with how he did his business and what he did to keep those guys in that game there, where there were some positions in the Vermont game where Vermont could have stretched it. And against Virginia, he literally out-Virginia'd Virginia. I mean, that's what they did, which is stunning. And again, but I think that when it comes down to the end of the day, I'm happy for UMBC. They got beat. I'm just heartbroken for Tony Bennett. I really am, because, you know, and again, you know, you listen to these quote unquote experts that talk a little bit about, you know, what programs are strong, what programs aren't strong. Do we have a call or no?
Yes.
Oh, we got a line. Okay. We got to tell me that stuff.
Take a guess.
Okay. Let's go. All right. Who's on the line? Who do you got? I don't even know. I don't see the piece of paper.
My man.
Oh, your man.
Jan.
Oh, Jan from Underhill. Good morning, Jan.
Jan, you with us, homie?
I'm with you.
What's happening, buddy?
Listen, you know, Lyles gets a lot of credit for that game last night, but Mora was the hero of the game. The guy was like a stinging gnat. Like, he could not. He was in on every loose ball. He was in on every 50-50 ball. He was playing unbelievable defense. You got to give that guy credit. He's not going to go anywhere after this college career, but. What a game he played last night.
Well, I think you got to give him credit. You got to give the big guys credit.
Sherburn.
I think you got to give. I don't think it was a great. It was so well done team defensively. I think it was amazing. They took Virginia's size out of the game completely. I mean, I think going into the game, guys like Salt and Diakite, and I think even Isaiah Wilkins at some point, I thought they would be able to kind of impose their will because of their size and strength, but they took those players out of it. I think, you know, you saw Mora get right into Kyle Guy and right into Ty Jerome, and those are two of the best in the ACC that they made them look very, very bad. You know, Virginia did not have DeAndre Hunter, which I think at the end of the day was a determining factor why Virginia just looked like they were just flat, tight, lost without having their best player on the floor. But you got to give all the credit to that UMBC team. And Yana, you made a great point. And you got to like that Mora kid. I mean, a hardworking kid, scrappy. I love his father in the stands with the big head, you know, running around with his son said. He's a fired up guy. And like Jan, thanks for the call, Jan. We appreciate it. And like Jan said, he probably isn't going to play at the next level. So this is his, you know, this is his swan song. And you got to really appreciate what he was able to do. But to get back to my point about Tony Bennett, there's a lot of people that kind of talk about this Virginia program as a program that seems to be bad for basketball. You know, a program because they play a slow down game, because they play to their strengths, it's bad for basketball. Somebody said that Tony Bennett takes all the fun out of basketball, and that these games define.
Not last night.
And these games define who he is as a coach and the program at Virginia. And I just say that he's been at Virginia for 9 years. And for the last 5 years, he's won 3 ACC championships, 2 ACC championships plus ACC titles in terms of the ACC tournament. They've been a number 1 to a number 2 to a number 4 seed the last 5 years. They've had some really tough things happen to them in the tournament that I think has determined their fate. In 2014, when they kind of came out of nowhere to win the ACC tournament in the sixth round of 16 against Michigan State, they had a 5 or 6 point lead late, and then Anthony Gill, their big forward down low, had an ankle injury. He came out. They couldn't handle Michigan State and ended up losing that basketball game. The next year, I think they were the best team in the country until, unfortunately, we had a real problem with Justin Anderson's finger breaking and an appendectomy. You take the best athlete off the floor. They end up getting beat again by Michigan State. The next year, they get to the Elite Eight and kind of have a meltdown late in the game against Syracuse to get to the Final Four. Last year, they lose Isaiah Wilkins, who was their glue guy, and they lost Austin Nichols, who they kicked off the team for personal reasons. The team was different. And this year, they go into the as a number one overall seed, 31-2 overall, ACC champs without DeAndre Hunter, who is arguably one of the best players in the ACC and the best athlete on Virginia. Tony Bennett gets more out of less than anybody in the country. And so for anybody to get on the airwaves or get in front of a television and say that Tony Bennett can't win the big one is wrong. And eventually, they're going to win.
Hold on, wait. I agree with you about 98%.
Yeah.
For them to say he can't win the big one isn't wrong because he hasn't.
Doesn't mean he can't. He
just hasn't yet.
He hasn't yet. And he has to.
It's no different than Mike Krzyzewski getting those years in the Final Four.
But for somebody to come out and say that what they do is bad for basketball. They do things fundamentally correct.
It's a different system defense. That's not sexy.
I get it. But to come out and say that it's like for Stephen A. Smith to come out on Monday and say he hopes they lose because nobody wants to watch that is to me is ridiculous to say. Anybody that loves basketball, let me get this off my chest.
Yeah, go ahead.
Anybody that loves basketball and understands it, it's like watching the UConn women's basketball team play. Fundamentally sound, solid basketball. And you play to your strengths. And I will never understand why anybody has to apologize for playing to their strengths. And I applaud Tony Bennett for doing what he does, recruiting the types of kids he does, and getting out of the kids that he does. Saying that, good for you, UMBC. I'm rooting for you the rest of the way. You deserve to win. You were the better team last night. But keep your head up, Tony Bennett and Virginia. Better times are coming. I'm telling you right now. Okay, I feel better.
We'll figure it out after we talk to Tara Sullivan from the Boston Globe and talk all kinds of free agency. And I know everybody wants to hear about the Giants, so we'll talk about them next.
Oh, yeah, cuckoo. Stay tuned. The Giants are coming. We'll be right back. I apologize. When I did the Sports Center, I've been so discombobulated. And I've been up all night, you know, being upset about my Cavaliers.
You were disheveled again?
Yeah, disheveled, discombobulated. Okay. But anyway, so the mistake I made is today in Barrie, the Division II semifinal between number 3 Milton and number 7 U32s at 3:45. That's a semifinal. I apologize.
Winner gets Fairhaven in the finals,
yep,
correct?
Yes, sir. And then in Division IV, the semifinal today is number 2 Sharon versus number 3 Poulton at 2 p.m. So I apologize for the mistake that those are not the finals. But again, I'm going to give myself a mulligan because I've had a bad day and a bad night.
You had a bad night.
I had a good day yesterday. I had a bad night. A really bad night. You're having a great morning. I'm having a horrible morning.
Why?
Because you two put me in a bad way. I thought for a minute there was we were going to have like this like nice moment where, you know, you guys were being kind to me.
We were.
And I should have known Aaron when I walked in. Aaron was kind of like not saying much and kind of his head was down a little bit. I should have known better. This is why I should never trust. You know what I mean?
You looked upset.
I was upset and I still am upset.
And to give him credit, he asked me, well, right before SportsCenter, just pretty upset. Should we play this? And I said, Hell yeah, I should.
That's right. Well, you know, listen. This is how I do unto others as I'd want done unto me. But our
next guest will make you feel better.
I'm like our good buddy. Let's get off this topic. Yes. I apologize for making the mistake on the semifinals today. So please, I'm sorry. But let's get into the next thing. Let's get off this UVA thing because I got to get off this. Our good friend on the TikTokers guest line now from the Boston Globe, Tara Sullivan joins us. Good morning, Tara. This is our morning so far. Are we there? Is Tara there?
I mean, she was on the line a minute ago.
Oh. All right. Well, let's see if
I'm here. Oh. Can you guys hear me?
I can hear you. Okay. We're good. Yes. Thanks for coming on today, Tara.
I lost you there for a minute.
All right. Well, so I don't know if you heard my introduction to you, but so formerly from New York area, now the Boston area. How does that work?
That's a good question. You just drive up 95 and there you are.
So the Patriots lose Nate Solder and the Giants gain him, we lose you and the Patriots get
exactly.
You?
Exactly.
There you go. And the Patriots just added another McCourty brother, so I'm good.
Okay.
So Tara, let's get into this. So now what will you be covering for the Globe now?
Well, I'm still a general sports columnist, so a little bit of everything. You know, did the playoff I started December 1st, so the playoff and the Super Bowl run, and then an incredibly quick turnaround, and I flew to South Korea and covered the Olympics, and then back, and, you know, there are some regional games, actually, in Boston, maybe the NCAA tournament, and I'm actually heading to spring training tomorrow, a little Red Sox. I'll be back at the Masters, so you name it. Just, you know, a little bit of this and a little bit of that.
Wow, Tara, that sounds great. Well, all right, so before we get into some of the stuff, the baseball, the football, and the stuff like that, let's talk about the Olympic experience. What was it like spending some time in South Korea?
The connection's not great. That was about the Olympics?
Yeah. How was the experience in South Korea?
Wow. Definitely the hardest thing I have ever covered. No doubt. It was the first one for me. Looking back, I'm so glad I did it. Some of the moments I was witness to, I'll remember forever. The women's hockey and that gold medal shootout win, and the curling gold medal at the end was fantastic, and a lot of stuff in between. But really hard. I mean, that first week, I really felt like I was dropped in the ocean and just treading water. You know, it's one thing to cover a Super Bowl when everybody is aimed toward the same event and you're all heading toward the same finish line. If you're at the Olympics, you know, there's 10 Super Bowls going on every day, and it's different. But great. I'm glad I did it.
Tara, what's it like? I mean, obviously there was the tension between North and South Korea, and we're not trying to get political here, but could you feel it in terms of the community there?
If you guys can hear me, I don't know. You keep going in and out. I'm not getting the question at all. All I heard was what was it like?
Okay, yeah, we can hear you pretty. We can hear you great. Should we try to call you back? Do you want us to give you a buzz back and see if we can get a better connection?
Yeah, you
want
to do that? It's a shame that I can't hear you guys too well.
That's fine. Hang up, and I'll have our producer will call you right back. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So basically, we're gonna have Aaron call Tara back. Jamie, if you could, Jamie Dennis is in here. Jamie, if you could just give Tara a call. Her number's written down over there. I had her. She's gonna. This is like live radio here, so we're going to get Tara back. Aaron, if you could just call Tara back, we're going to see if we can get a better connection. So interesting conversation here, Bernie, with her. Obviously having an opportunity to go from the New York sports scene to the Boston sports scene. And what a run that's got to be able to, you're covering the Yankees and the Giants and the Jets and the Knicks and all these teams for so many years. And then all of a sudden you're thrusted into the Boston sports scene. And it's like, it's a whole different dynamic. And you get to start your situation off. She started in December, but basically got on an airplane with the South Korea to cover the Olympics. That's pretty exciting.
It is. It's, you know, something that, as she mentioned, it sounded like every day there's so many crazy events going on and so many different things. And just to be able to be part of that and to go where she was in terms of, you know, where the tension is between the two countries and that kind of stuff had to be unnerving.
Yeah, but it's also got to be quite just to be a part of that and to see that. You know, anytime you have an opportunity to see another culture like that, it's got to be amazing. And it's hard to tell when you're watching on television, but it would have been interesting to see the dynamic. And do we have her back? You got you now, Tara?
So better.
Sounded better? All right, all right. Okay.
Much better. Okay, now come back at me.
All right. So I guess the question I had for you was, obviously, and we're not trying to get political on the show at all, but obviously there is tension between North and South Korea, but it looked like there was some bonding that happened during the Olympics. Could you feel that in the community when you were down there? Could you feel that in the area that, you know, between the North and the South? Could you see things down there, over there?
I mean, you could certainly see, you know, the stuff that was staged and staged may be too strong a word, but, you know, the opening ceremonies and the Korean hockey game when the women's when the team played together. But on the bottom line level, no, I don't think people. I honestly didn't feel like the local audience was that swept up in the Olympics. You know, the attendance wasn't great locally. It played more on the international stage than it did, I thought, locally.
Oh, that's interesting. So you're saying that basically locally, the locals weren't as in tune with the Olympics as maybe it looked like on television?
That was my sense. Yeah. Huh. Because you could see a lot of the events too were filled with, you could see big school groups in the stands and things like that, because I think they were trying to fill a lot of the arenas. I mean, you know, South Korea is not known for its winter sports culture, if you will, or a long history. I mean, speed skating, yes, and certain things, but up in the mountains, you know, they had to build all those resorts from scratch and that. So I don't know. There were definitely some stories written of, you know, the typical Olympic stories, what's going to happen afterward. And, you know, I think there were certainly some controversies about all the money poured into it and the attendance wasn't great. But that being said, I mean, the people in South Korea were incredibly hospitable. I mean, it was a great first Olympics by all accounts for me to have experienced, because the locals were really nice.
So you mentioned the U.S. women's hockey team winning the gold medal. You covered that. Give us an idea what that was like talking with those girls after that.
that was one of my favorite stories of the Olympics. I tried to get to a few of the games leading up to it. You know, this team has a great history. and a great rivalry, right, with Canada. U.S. Right. women versus Canada in ice hockey is one of the best rivalries in sports. They go back and forth. Every game is close. Every game is intense. Now, granted, the rest of the field, you know, isn't as good. So usually you're just waiting for this moment when these two superpowers, if you will, collide with something big at stake. And they delivered on every promise in that gold medal game. And it had, you know, the U.S. had gone four Olympics without winning that gold medal. They had won other big tournaments, the World Championship, the Olympic tournament.
Oh, did we lose her? Bad connection for... See, she goes to Boston and now we lose connection. If you can hear us out, give us a buzz back. So again, unbelievable. I mean, did we lose her? Looks like we lost her. All right. Well, if we can try to get her back, great. If not, we'll just kind of take it from here.
Man, this segment, this is like Virginia this is in the like second
Virginia,
half.
This is Virginia. Yesterday. This is Virginia last night. Exactly. But again, being able to be a part of something like that, I think the interesting conversation there with her is that the community down there and the population wasn't as engaged as you would have thought they would have been. You know, which is kind of interesting, don't you think, Bernie? You would
think, yes.
Especially with how intense that is, and when the Olympics comes to your city. You know,
we'd be at everything.
Well, but you build the new city.
Right.
I mean, you build the city around. You're building all these arenas. I mean, it's the biggest thing in the world, potentially for sports. Especially you go to a, you know, South Korea. You think that the population be all into it.
You would think so, but again, different strokes for different folks. And third time's the charm.
All right, she's back, Tara Sullivan. She's back.
We'll try again. There must be a leprechaun on the line.
It must be. All right. We only have a few minutes left in this segment, so let's go. Let's move on to it. We'll get back to the American sports. So the NFL free agency is here. It's been pretty crazy. Any comments on what the Patriots are doing so far now that you're covering them?
Well, you know, I feel like I've just stepped into this new world of the Patriots where you sort of trust in their process. They're not known for the big splashes in free agency, and they have a lot of holes to fill. Like, I think they made a few late signings last night, but... yeah, it's just different being up there. It's a different kind of, we don't want those big money guys. We're going to find the smaller level, second, third tier guys who fit the system. So, I don't know. I feel like I may have entered the equation as it's dwindling down, you know, or we have to be heading toward the end of the Brady run, and I feel like that's probably going to be the story for this next year or two while I'm up here.
Have you seen and or heard or feel any of the Brady, Belichick, Kraft, you know, grumblings and frustrations with each other?
Well, personally, I'm not as, you know, wired into it, but it's impossible not to get that sense from the other reporters and the people who are around and the stories that have come out. And as I wrote at the time, I mean, I think in any situation, if you took three driven, successful, egotistical, highly powered, in control guys and put them together for this long in any professional situation, there would have to be some fraying and some, you know, just some conflict. So to me, the fact that it's gone on this long without them all killing each other is remarkable. And if it is nearing the end, I just don't find it that shocking because something's going to have to give. I mean, Brady just can't play forever. So, it's, the Garoppolo, that part was certainly interesting, what they gave him up for. The stuff with Brady's trainer, you know, not being allowed on the team planes anymore. I mean, those are real things and do allow for the questions as to what, you know, what everybody's happiness level is at this point.
Tara, we appreciate the time today. We have a ton more to ask you, but our time isn't allowing it. Maybe we'll try this again in a couple weeks.
Absolutely. Anytime. My apologies.
Hey, no problem. Congratulations on the new job in Boston, and all our best to you guys. I'm really happy for you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tara.
All right. Okay, Tara Sullivan from the Boston Globe. Interesting perspective. I know we didn't get the... It's kind of a crazy segment with phones. That's what happens sometimes, man. You're on the cell. You're trying to, you know, you go in and out of service. That's what happens. I mean, she did the best she could. But interesting perspective on the Olympics. And obviously, she's coming into a Boston sports scene where I think in Patriot land right now, people are a little concerned. Like, is this the end of what the Patriots are? But I'll believe that when I see it.
Exactly. And, you know, just wild, wild stuff, you know, between you and Virginia and Tara's
phone.
In and out. It's just we're off to a sputtering start.
The phone line was hopping around a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well played.
Or how about jumping around?
Well, he's trying to make it sound like...
you got me. No, you got me.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a break. But for the record, this show usually is like off the cliff anyway. So that's par for the course for us.
Fair.
We'll be right back.
Will Howard.
morning. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. I am your host, Jeff Paul. Bernie Siplicki riding shotgun with me in his Duke Blue sweatshirt.
245 today, babe.
And Aaron, who I thought was my man, crossed me.
Nah, he's the man.
Had crossed to do it for me. The fans, man.
Bullied me. You guys bullied me.
We didn't
you're going to be a lot like Dave Hunter over there.
What do you mean he bullied you? All we did was play facts, just like you were talking facts earlier in your 15-minute rant about Virginia and Tony Bennett and on and on and on we went.
I just have to get that off my chest.
I let Philly fan AC on after the Super Bowl.
Oh, my
for
God.
The
let me
fans.
Tell you something. AC fan. AC was sending me. You should read what AC was sending me this morning in social media.
I can, only imagine.
I said, right now, AC, I wish you were Santa Claus and I was a snowball. That's all I can say. That's all I can say. Hey, big game today. The Division I Boys Basketball Championship at Patrick Gym. Rutland High School, the defending champion, undefeated, takes on upstart Mount Man.
They're a great program, but yes.
I think people were expecting this to be a Rice and Rutland thing and a big upset win for Mount Mansfield. I think it's a huge win for the program for Mount Mansfield. They're right back in the championship. Jeff Davis doing a great job there. And who better to talk to than our good friend from the Burlington Free Press? Award-winning Free Press writer, Austin Danforth. Good morning, Austin.
Morning, guys.
Good morning.
I wasn't sure if there was going to be a show today, but... Well,
I did see the tweet that you put on the Burlington Free Press this morning about somebody talking about bones of Virginia's past or something that, you know, I didn't appreciate that when I was doing some research this morning. But anyway, Austin,
well,
good to have
you. Austin, what'd you tweet out?
You know, he retweeted
or
whatever it is.
No, I can pull it up.
No, you don't need to pull it up.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about it first.
No, you don't need to pull it up. We're talking about high school basketball.
It was something about the dead carcass of Bennett Ball.
So
Pat 40 of Yahoo.
Yeah, Pat 40.
Together
he's something.
a crazy good column. Not that Jeff thinks it's crazy good.
No.
But so he said, one line was, UMBC Retrievers fetched the dead carcass of Bennett Ball and left it on the doorstep, and Virginia staged an abdication of composure that cannot be adequately described. March has become littered with cavalier bones.
Yeah, that's what he wrote. That's what he retweeted.
That's a good retweet, Austin. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, Austin. Off the Christmas list, as you, Austin Danforth. Okay, Austin, let's get into this.
But Austin was genuinely caring for you.
No, he wasn't.
He reached
like
out
you.
To me last night and said, "Is Jeff going to be okay tomorrow?"
Yeah, okay.
So Austin,
dead serious. I checked in with Brian. I was like, "Is this going to be okay?"
Yes.
Okay.
So go ahead.
First of all, I don't believe either of you have my best interest at hand.
Can we segue to the high school?
I mean, you've peed me off now. I'm mad. All right, let's segue. Let's just get on to this. All right, with all seriousness, Patrick Gym, huge game today. Undefeated Rutland against Mount Mansfield, who upsets Rice. And some people may think that's not an upset, but I think a lot of people thought Rice, when they were healthy, was arguably one of the best teams, at least in terms of talent-wise, in the state. Mount Mansfield beats them at Patrick Gym and now has to take on this Rutland team that I don't know if they've really been challenged yet this year. What do we expect to see this week, this afternoon, Austin?
Well, I picked Rice to get to the final two. I thought it was going to be a close one because they played two close ones against MMU earlier this year. And MMU came out the other day. They looked like a team that can beat Rutland. They were composed. They executed. They stuck to the game plan. MMU is almost a throwback, or they're super unconventional in today's game, in as much as they basically have one guy that looks like a guard in their first, eight-man rotation. They can go 9 or 10 deep. Seven of those guys are about 6'4" or taller. It's almost like a one-out, four-in look that, no one else has to deal with until they play MMU. And the other night against Rice, MMU put up 3 three-pointers. They outscored Rice 42-24 in the paint. They almost gave the game away at the free throw line going 10 for 28, but this MMU team is playing really well right now. Jeff Davis, as I think everybody would know and would agree, is probably one of the two or three best high school basketball coaches, in Vermont. What he's done with that program, before he took over, they'd been to one semifinal. Now they've been 6 in, I think, 18 years. So he's no stranger to the moment. On the other side, as he put it, when I talked to him yesterday, he's looking at a team that hasn't lost in like 5 years. Rutland, they're coming in on 39 game winning streak that includes a really impressive win over St. Jay on Thursday night.
Well, and that was going to be my follow-up. I was surprised, not at Rutland winning, but just how easy they won the game against St. Johnsbury, a team that I thought was going to be very dangerous and had a chance to put up the opportunity to get an upset. But tell us more about that semifinal as well.
Yeah, so like St. Jay, they're pretty guard-heavy, a lot of jump shots, and guys that can get to the hoop too, the Carlisle brothers, Antonio and Alex. And the Rutland never gave them a chance. They got out to a 13-0 lead and never looked back. They held the Carlisle brothers, who I think between them average about 26, 27 points a game, held them to 9 total. And a lot of that goes to senior Noah Tyson, who's probably the best defender and on-ball defender in the state. And then you have Jamison Evans, who's the Raiders' top scorer. He's really come on as a defensive threat in the last half of the year or so. What I thought was a tremendously good point talking to the Raiders coach, Mike Wood, the way he looked at it, this team was always going to be good at defense because they were the team that had to defend last year's Division I champions every day for an entire season. So, like, defense, good defense is in their DNA, or at least, defending against good teams. And it's shown, this year, I think they've allowed an average of like 40.5 points per game. But in same token, MMU is right there. They've given up 42.7 points a game against Metro competition. So I think we got a doozy.
So now if you're Coach Wood from Rutland and Coach Davis from MMU with about 36 hours to prepare for this championship, what are you telling your teams to be successful and cut down the nets?
I think with Jeff Davis and MMU, I think you tell your guys, stick to your identity. You know what you do well. You know how to do those things well. Crash the glass. Make smart choices with the ball. You don't have to overplay because, if you do what you're capable of doing, that's very hard to disrupt. On the other side, Rutland, there's a couple ways you can look at it. Like, you don't want to get in a half-court game with MMU. You want to get out and transition and push the tempo as much as possible. Or, what you saw the other night against Rice pushes the tempo, and that gives MMU more chances. Like, if your shot's all of a sudden not going down and they're cleaning up those chances, that gives them more chances at the other end. But I think, Rutland, just stick to your formula. It's the same thing. As Mike Wood said, you're not going to change your stripes in 24 hours. You do what you do that got you there, and you see where it gets you. And the funny thing is, these teams met in Mount Mansfield season opener. It was Rutland's second game. That was a 4-point Raiders win in Jericho, and it was December 13th. So that's like 2 years ago.
Austin, is this one of those games where Mount Mansfield's mentality is let's just make sure we're close in the fourth quarter, like one of those games where they just want to keep it close? Or is this more, for last time they played it was a 4-point game, and I know it was a long time ago, but Rutland really hasn't been challenged all year. Does it benefit Mount Mansfield to have a lot of close games where Rutland hasn't had a ton of close games?
Yeah, so I did the math yesterday. Rutland's had 4 games decided by single digits. And it's not because they didn't play the best teams out there, because they played everybody. I think the thing for Mount Mansfield, they really need to, it's not staying close because they're not the team that is going to chuck a lot of threes anyway. It's doing what you do, playing good defense, and, maybe you hope that Rutland doesn't, you can coax some awkward shots, some deep jumpers that don't go, and you turn the game for yourself that way. But it's just playing strong, playing big, playing smart.
Austin Danforth, you're the best. You're going to be there today, right?
I will. Folks can follow along on the Free Press site and have full coverage up after that. Alex Abrami is down in Barrie for Milton's first boys' hoops semi in, I think, 25 years.
Since Brent Kendall.
We've got Ted Ryan in Northfield for Norwich's national championship game.
And let me just say this about Austin and Alex. I'll tell you what, at the America East Championship game, those two guys were dressed to kill.
Yes.
I mean, I didn't even recognize those two. And I'll tell you right now, they were, you know, they were looking sharp, had the ties going, the jackets. How you talk about the Free Press must have been very proud of you two. Very proud.
We'll see. The crazy thing is people, because of what UMBC did last night, people are still reading Alex's game story as they like frantically search to figure out who the heck is UMBC.
Thanks for the insight, Austin. Enjoy the game today, buddy.
Talk to you later, guys.
Thanks, Austin.
Yeah, it should be an interesting game. I think if there's a team out there, and I think Rice, and you can tell me better than because I'm just basing on what I'm reading, but it sounded like Rice and Rutland were more of the same type of styles, where Mount Mansfield's more of a slow-you-down type game, want to beat you on the inside. You know, it'll be interesting to see what happens today.
And Mount Mansfield's huge. I mean, they're just really big.
Yeah.
And, you know, they, like you talk about playing to your strengths. That's what they do. And Jeff Davis does a great job of that. And, you know, this is going to be a great game. So, you know, if you got the opportunity, head up to Patrick Gym this afternoon and check it out.
You covered last year's state championship game, and it was a very low scoring game. Do you expect this game to be a little bit different than that?
No, I don't. I think it's going to be low scoring game because I think that's what Mount Mansfield wants to do to try to win, and they're very, very good at dictating tempo.
Patrick Gym on the campus of University of Vermont's a place to be. Tip off is at 2:00 today. Rutland High School, Mount Mansfield. Okay, take a quick break when we come back.
3:00 tip.
3:00 tip. Did I say 2:00?
Yeah, you are.
2:00 in Chicago. 3:00 here. I was just saying for people that are listening.
Baltimore? What time?
Baltimore at 3:00.
Okay.
3:00. Come on now. I'm not that out of it.
I was just referencing Baltimore as in UMBC.
Again, Bernie, you're just a jerk.
Thank you.
All right, take a quick break when we come back. Hey, it's St. Patrick's Day.
I'm Polish.
Oh, you don't care?
No.
All right, we'll be right back. We have some breaking news here on Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3 ESPN.com. In the NFL world, the New York Jets have just acquired the number 3 pick from the Colts for the number 6 pick, the 37th pick, the 49th pick for this year, and then a second rounder for next year. So the Jets get the number 3 pick from the Colts, and the Colts get the Jets 6 pick, the 37th pick, and 49th pick this year. And a second rounder next year.
Why didn't they call the Giants?
I don't know.
I would have done that in a second.
That's a great question to say. Would if you're the Giants number 2, would you do that? But again, I mean, do you want Barkley? Do you want one of those quarterbacks? I mean, I think it's about getting the guy you want, right? I mean, do you pass up on Barkley if he's there?
I understand your point, but I think the Giants have so many holes to fill. If you could get number 6 this year, then you would have the second pick in the second round, which is going to be what, 30?
But wait a minute about holes to fill. Now, hold on a minute. Let me just say this. If you believe in Eli Manning like you believe in him, yeah, and you realize you have a healthy Odell Beckham back, and you got a healthy, you know, you got a defense that went healthy, I think, with this linebacker, if they're a lot of those guys are potential all pros. And now you put the running back in there. I mean, maybe you're able to get yourself back into contention again with the right guy. You get this explosive running back. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is this isn't one of those situations where you're looking at a giant team like, say, maybe Cleveland that really has a ton of implicit situations. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think that's a pretty tough question.
Right, yeah, but you have so many needs on the offensive line. You still need linebackers even though you've acquired two. And with DRC, I just think to have 6 and that you would have 4 picks in the top 49.
But you don't know if this was offered to the Giants. You don't know that.
No, that's why I'm saying I wish they would have called New York. I mean, because I would have done that in a second.
Yeah, I don't know if I would have done that in a second.
Really?
I really don't know. I think, I know nothing. You know, I know that.
You're a Virginia fan.
Okay. Anyway, but we know nothing about, but all I can say is from what you read about and what you're seeing about this Barkley kid, he's Ezekiel Elliott. And you can see the difference that Ezekiel Elliott makes.
Ezekiel Elliott had a great offensive line.
He also made a very average quarterback really good.
Right, and because of his offensive line.
I'm telling you right now, but again, if the Giants rebuild this offense like what they're doing, and you put this this game changer running back in the back with the ability they have from wide receiver, though I don't believe in the quarterback, yeah, I don't know if you can pass on that, Bernie.
I understand that, but how's he going to be able to run the ball if nobody can block for him?
But how about this? How about if he goes? This is what I would do. I would wait to see what Cleveland does. If Cleveland takes Barkley first, then I'd trade the second pick, get a bunch of picks. You could do that.
I'm not sorry, Miss Jackson. I'm sorry, Jeff Paul. You're not on right now.
What do you mean I'm not on? Because I'm not agreeing with you?
No.
the one scary thing for the Giants about the prospect of taking all those picks and picking a bunch of offensive linemen is they've done that in the first two rounds, four out of the last 5 years, picked a lineman high, and it's not working for them.
Like so, who? Besides Eric Flowers.
And Pew?
I don't remember. I looked at the list.
No, but Pew is gone.
Their names are...
Right, but he was good.
Nah, he wasn't great, Bernie. He wasn't a difference-making offensive lineman. He isn't.
They signed Nate Solder, didn't they?
Yeah, they just signed Nate Solder.
So
we got an old offensive lineman from the Patriots.
No,
great.
I mean, he's prime. He's in his prime. He's not in his prime? I mean, you act like this guy's like 50 years old.
Well, in football years, he is.
He's not. We're going to talk football next segment, next hour. We got text.
We got upsets to talk about.
Yeah. You have got me all off my game.
I know. It's hard to get me off my game.
Fantastic. Seriously, not that it's off my game, but I got to say this. It's been a rough morning with you two.
And it's only been an hour.
I know. I got another one of these.
And Aaron, we got to play those highlights again at the top of the second hour.
Maybe I will.
Sports Center time.
If it has to do with sports, we're talking about it. WCPV, Essex, Burlington, Plattsburgh. The Sports Station, 101.3 ESPN.
Last night in high school girls basketball championship action from Berry Auditorium in Division II, the number 2 seed Mount Abe knocked off the number 1 seed Fairhaven 33-25. And in Division 4, the number 2 seed MSJ Mounties from Rutland blasted the number 8 seed Blue Mountain 39-21. And today, Vermont High School Boys Basketball Championship Saturday. There's a couple championships today. In Division 3, we've got number 1 Windsor. They're set to face the 2 seed Williamstown at 7:30 from Berry Auditorium. And today in Division 1 at Patrick Gym on the campus of the University of Vermont, the number 1 seed and defending champion Rutland High School faces 3rd seed Mount Mansfield. Tip-off is set for 3 p.m. And last night, history was made in the NCAA tournament as America East champion and 16 seed UMBC blasted the number 1 team in the nation, Virginia, 74-54 in the first round of the NCAA tournament South Region. It's the first time in the history of the tournament that a 16 seed has knocked off a 1 seed. The Retrievers move on to face Kansas State tomorrow in Charlotte. This SportsCenter update was brought to you by The Archives, a combination arcade and bar that focuses on vintage arcade games, unique craft beers, and creative cocktails, located at 191 College Street in beautiful downtown Burlington. Don't miss The Archives' St. Patrick's Day specials today, as their bartenders will be pouring Guinness and left-hand milk stout, as well as zero-gravity Irish stout, and will be featuring a cocktail using single malt Irish whiskey. Also, Pie Emporium will be on hand starting at 5 p.m. with meat pies. That's at The Archives in downtown Burlington. Second hour. Hopefully a better hour of Sports Saturday with me and Bernie coming right at you.
All right, that's enough of the commercials. Sports Saturday is back, and you can be part of the show by calling or texting 802-655-6672. So start dialing now. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN.
Going past Wilkins, putting it up, and it falls!
Right now the Retrievers have to be value the basketball.
Enough of this.
What?
Can't miss. Shock it off.
I'm going to remember this voice.
College basketball.
So are we.
UMBC makes history in Charlotte.
So we definitely need some help emotionally, mentally. And what a great caller we have coming on right now.
Is there a sport, my friend, the sports psychologist?
Our great friend, the sports psychologist, Dr. Dave.
Dave Landers. Dave. From St. Michael's. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Jeff. How are you?
I'm okay.
He's not good, Dr. Dave, and I'm not going to lie. I am tormenting him.
Yeah.
That's unusual.
Yeah, really. Yeah, listen, you know, I was doing okay, and I was getting over all this stuff, and I was trying to, you know, be the bigger person, come on the radio show and talk about the games, but these two guys are in my grill. And Austin Danforth, I mean, it doesn't end. I mean, I can't get away from it. People are killing me on the Twitter page. Like they're getting me on the text message page. Like, I'm taking it from all angles here, Dr. Dave. I need some help.
You ask for that every time. Every time you go on the radio, you ask for that.
No, I know that.
So, Dr. Dave, we were talking. We were talking briefly while SportsCenter was going on, and you brought up some really interesting questions that I think are great to talk about over the air. So, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Bernie. So, from a psychological perspective, the University of Vermont team just had you know, a horrific loss, and they're devastated by the loss, the coach is devastated by the loss, and they go into the NIT tournament, and all of a sudden, we say to them, oh, and by the way, instead of playing the way you've played your entire lives, two 20-minute halves, you're going to play like the women do. You're going to have four 10-minute, you know, quarters. And then, by the way, the three-point shot line that's always been there, we're going to expand that by about a foot. You know, and the paint, we're expanding the boundary there. And, I mean, this is a nationally televised tournament game. The winner can eventually be down at Madison Square Garden, I think, playing. You're coming off a loss, and all of a sudden we say to these guys, everything's changing because we're going to do an experiment. Does that make any sense?
It's a great question.
You know, it does and it doesn't. It, without question, tests the mentality of a team that was devastated and the coaching staff of the rules. But I think they look at it of a perspective from the rules committee is, you know, people are always talking about the game evolving and changing and they want to see real right. change, but they don't have opportunities to do that. So they need a sample size, and unfortunately, that's where the NIT comes into play.
Then why wouldn't you do it with one of those lower-level tournaments, like the CBI? Or yeah. There's a zillion tournaments yeah. you can do that. The NIT, I agree with Dr. Dave here.
Hold on.
Okay,
hold on.
Fair enough.
Why wouldn't we do it with the CBI? And I think they should. I'm not going to disagree. But also at the NIT, it is more of the power conferences, and unfortunately, their voice is probably a little heavier in the rules committee pool and the changing and stuff like that. So I agree with you that I don't think they should do it, but I think that's why they do it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what you're saying there, but I think, and that's a great point, and no one's brought that, I don't think anyone's brought that up yet. That is a new
Well, that's why Dr. Dave's the best.
No, he is the best. I thought you were calling to like make me feel better. Instead, you're just asking Bernie a question. Typical. I need some help over here, and you're that question. But I think it's a great question.
You need more than help from Dr. Dave.
I know, that's true. Okay. But I listen, it's a great question, but I think it is interesting to think that you're asking a team, and it wasn't just Vermont that had to adapt. Middle Tennessee State. If anybody had some gripe going into that game, it was Middle Tennessee State. No question about that.
Yeah, and if you want to get into, you know, a gender thing in terms of masculinity, so the women have been playing with, you know, four 10-minute quarters for a couple of years now. You know, and the men haven't, and so all of a sudden we're saying to the men, not only do you have to change the way you've looked at the game your entire life, but now you're going to start playing like the girls do.
I don't think
that has anything to do with it, because with the four quarters, they went to a different philosophy in terms of fouls. With the girls, and I actually, that's why I like this rule change. You play four 10-minute quarters, you have one media timeout, and then you don't have a 1-and-1. After the fifth team foul, it's two shots. And I'm a fan of that, because when, as a coach, and if you foul, why should I foul you to have the reward of potentially getting the ball back after one missed shot? If I'm ahead and doing all that kind of stuff, why should you give the opportunity to the team that's trailing?
Yeah.
Well, and
those are great points.
And I will say that I don't think this has as much to do with the players as it would be the coaching of these games in four quarters. I think that's where it would change. I think the athletes are just going to play.
Yeah.
With the amount of timeouts that happen in each halves anyway, I mean, you're basically playing that anyway. But I think it changed how you're coaching these games. And obviously, that I would think it would be more of a coaching change than it would be a player change, in my opinion. But that's just me.
Okay. I was just curious because, you know, I followed UVM, obviously, and it's a great team. They had a great, great season. And what a heartbreaker at the end. And then to put them on national television and then say, oh, by the way, we're going to change all this. So I was just curious, and I thought I'd call my experts in the field. So thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Dr. Dave,
thanks,
always great to hear from
so
you, my
for
friend.
Calling, buddy. Thanks for calling.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You know, and I will say this. It is the NIT, and, you know, and truth be told, like, you know, it's a secondary tournament. So I guess
you got a chance to go to the greatest venue in the world to play two games of basketball. I understand, but I still see to be able to go play and be in Madison Square Garden.
But I think in terms of if you're gonna experiment, you experiment with teams with these types of situations. And again, you brought up there are a lot of power conferences in the NIT, so I think it's probably pretty good. He mentioned UVM. We want to make sure we mention how much fun we had at Fan Fest last week. UVM, what a great event that was before the America East Championship. So gracious, so many great things happening. There's so many different events happening for the fans. It was great to be a part of that, Bernie.
Yeah, so it was, as always. You know, they did a great job in terms of hosting and making sure that everybody had fun and was ready to go. And, you know, hey, hopefully we'll be back next year.
Yeah, 655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation, 802-655-6672. Or you can text us in the Town Fair Tire text line. I just got a text here. It says, has anyone mentioned to Jeff that two of his beloved teams are now on the wrong side of sports history? That would be the Virginia Cavaliers and my Yankees, who the Red Sox beat after the Yankees had a 3-0 ALCS lead. They were the first team to lose the 3-0 lead. I was very aware of that. Whoever sent that in, thank you.
And whoever sent that in, yes, thank you.
Yeah, okay. But the point is, I mentioned that last night on my social media that, you know, yay for me. My two teams are on the other end of history, which is always a lot of fun. I do want to talk about the Vermont. You and I haven't put a bow on the Catamounts yet. You know, you followed them all season. An amazing year for an amazing group of kids. Was it 99 total wins for that senior class?
Yes.
They almost got that 100th win, 99 in their career. And I got to say, we have talked a lot about the expectations on this team, and I got some slack last week because we were mentioning Vermont and national championship, and my point that I was
saying. Well, but now your point is really, really, like, solid.
Yeah,
well, I was giving you the eye roll, and I'm like, what are you going? Hold on, let me finish.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You know, you were. I'm like, Jeff, you're crazy, and then, you know, UMBC is one step closer to a national championship from the league.
And I think my point being is, if people are talking about, and I know you're just, you know, there you go again, Vern. There you go again. But my point is, when people talk about teams getting to the second weekend, I think that's when you start talking about the unbelievable potential of getting to a Final Four. And I think it said a lot about this Vermont program that they were talking in those terms. And now UMBC has an opportunity to do this against Kansas State tomorrow. Go ahead. Yeah, you're going to get plays in the background. You guys are on fire today. But what I want to talk about is I want to talk about the UVM team. So after UVM's loss, obviously against UMBC, there were a lot of fingers being pointed. Cat Country was very upset. You and I have talked about this a lot, the fan base for the Catamounts, with the expectation on this team all year. So even those tough losses they had, say, against Bucknell early in the season. And
who gave Michigan State everything they could handle.
Exactly, Northeastern during
the
season.
Who lost to the College of Charleston and the College of in their CAA championship, and the College of Charleston almost beat Auburn yesterday.
And Kentucky.
Who's still playing.
Yeah, and probably going to be in a Final Four now.
And UMBC, who is now in the round of 32.
Yeah, so,
but okay, anyways.
Exactly. But we understand the expectation that was put on these guys and what the, you know, and obviously when they didn't get the American East Championship, there's a lot of disappointment. And I think, and for people that get upset, and then there are people that are mad at the people that get upset and to say these things, and I think it says a lot about the program. Again, like I said, back then, when they were fans were getting mad at this team for losing, that we actually have this mentality for the Catamounts that we expect them to get into the NCAA tournament and compete in the NCAA tournament. And when they lose to teams like Bucknell and Northeastern and Kentucky, we expect them to win. Like, the UVM fans are expecting them to win. That's just so much about what Becker has done and the program. At the same time, you know, when they lose these games, that's the game. And you know, it's disappointing. It's okay to be disappointed. It's okay to be disappointed in them because you have expectations. Like, the gentleman that I was sitting next behind at the UVM game was, oh my God, he was so fired up. I mean, he was a great fan, but he was so frustrated because of what this program has built itself into being. And I think that says a lot about what the program is. So I understand the frustration and people kind of getting on social media and making these, you know, they talked about, you know, that they're not any good and that they're a joke and that if they're in any other conference, they wouldn't be any good. I mean, the things.
Whatever.
That are,
those are just cowards on social media.
But I know it fires you up, but that, well, it kind of. Go ahead.
No, sorry. I'm going to give you a little bit of a long winded response.
Sure.
Right.
Go
now.
Ahead. Okay.
So obviously the devastation is there, and that we should be nothing more proud of this team and
right.
what they've done, they accomplished. And did the ultimate goal fall short? Yes. Did we want to see them playing yesterday or Thursday? Of course we did. And are we all hurt? Of course we are. But for the way these guys represented the school and the program, and like you said, the expectations that are there, and to be chased all around. And I'm not saying this. I'm really not saying this to be a wise guy.
Sure.
When I was watching SportsCenter, your guy Tony Bennett this morning had a wonderful answer.
Class act.
Yep. And this is when you enter the arena. And you play sports, there's the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat, and it happens. And guess what? It happened, and it's unfortunate. But to say that these guys are no good and that the season was a failure, and that's really, you're going to say, yeah, Virginia losing, that's devastating. Of course it is. It's heartbreaking. They won the ACC by the greatest margin of victory. They won the postseason ACC. And to say that your season is not a success because in one game out of, what, 37, they laid an egg in the second half? Give me a break, people. Vermont was up 9 with 8 minutes to go. Did they finish? No. Did Jarius Lyles make a great play? Yes. Did we make some uncharacteristic mistakes? Yes. These are still 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old kids that we put our heart and soul into because we care and we're passionate about, and they make come up a little short. And after 4 years of winning 99 games, going to the CBI semifinals twice, going to the NCAA tournament, giving Purdue everything you can handle, winning the America East, having the two longest winning streaks in the NCAA basketball over the last 2 years, and you're going to kill these guys? You're a coward. You love this program. You be part of this program. You be there when they win. You be there more when they lose.
I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. But at the same time, and again, I agree with what you're saying, but I think it says a lot about the program that you're having these fans that are this upset. It just tells you where they've come from. It just tells you where they're at. I couldn't have said any better, Bernie, and I'm glad you said it because you nailed it. But again, you fans out there that are going after the Catamounts, and I'm sure that it's been a week now and you're over it. Now you see what UMBC just did to Virginia, and now they probably take some of the pain away from that loss. But understand where this program came from. Understand where this program's been. Right. Understand what they've been able to do
when I played.
Yeah.
We couldn't win a conference game.
No question.
We were getting killed.
But how about this, more importantly, when you were playing, if you got to a conference championship, that was a big deal.
Right. Now the expectation is to win.
Every year.
Come on.
And you can say, come on. But,
no, I'm saying in terms of...
Understand, but that comes with the territory when you're successful, and that means you've got a successful program. That's the whole point here. And let me tell you something else. There's more coming. Because he's a tremendous recruiter.
Yes.
Becker and his staff does a great job. The fact that they could redshirt or have, if they were healthy, potentially redshirt some of the talent that they had this year says so much about who they are and what they are. And they're not done. Like, this team isn't done.
No.
And that's what's so exciting. So you fans out there, I get the anger. As you just mentioned, the Virginia team, they're trashing Bennett. That's why I was so upset first segment about that. They're trashing Bennett and this team. You got to understand the game. You just got to get it.
You're killing people for a two-hour window. A one-hour window,
and 20-minute window.
Well, but I'm saying in terms of real time,
right?
And now you're not going to look at it over a year, over 2 years, over 3 years, and it just bugs me. And I guess really the hardest part for me as a UVM fan, and this was the emotional side of it. There are 6 seniors that have touched the lives of the coaching staff and fans in the community that are not going to be part of our lives every day anymore. And I think that's part of the hardness of losing and that. So for everyone to be gone now, it stinks. And now it's just time to regroup. And when you're starting with Ernie and Everett Duncan and Anthony Lamb, we'll take those 3 building blocks for the future.
And it's the next step. It's the next step in the Vermont steps. I mean, you know, we went through with Kopp and Rath and Sorrentine. Then it was handed off to the next group. Then it was handed off to the next group. Now it's handed off to this group. And they did an amazing job. And the trash, and Bernie, you're absolutely right. These kids were part of the community. They were role models. I looked at the way
you... How many of these kids have ever gotten in trouble?
Well,
zero.
But more importantly than that, look at the type of kids they are. I looked at your daughter and your son,
exactly,
who looked up to the, when we had them on the air, you could just see how excited they were just to talk about them and to be able to be around them. That says everything you want to know about this UVM program, period. And any other program that loses. I mean, like, I can't speak for anybody else except for our hometown here and what these kids have meant to the university, to the program. When I'd go downtown to have dinner with my wife at the spot downtown and seeing Trey Bell Haynes working back there, seeing him in the community and working, that's cool. That says that he's out there with his community. It says a lot about the program, a lot about the team, and Vermont's not done. They're an up-and-coming mid-major. Don't sleep on this team and don't bash them like that.
And you know what?
Shame on you.
This is what we have, and haters are going to hate, but if you're going to hate, come say it to our face. Don't put it on the computer and have keyboard muscles.
Yeah, and if you say it to my face, make sure I'm behind Bernie, though.
Yes,
Bernie's,
no problem.
Bernie's a big man. Even though I'm, you know, well, yeah. I'm with Bernie, right? You can tell, you know, anyway. All right, let's take a break, come back, Bernie needs to take a shower, cool down.
Yeah, now I'm all worried.
See, that's what I'm saying. That's what I mean. When somebody goes after who you love, that's why you go after my boy Tony Bennett.
I never went after Tony.
No, you didn't, but you went after me. And I do love me some me.
Yeah.
We'll be right back. So 855-6672 is the number to call. 802-655-6672 if you want to join our conversation. It's been a pretty intense day here on the show. A lot of emotion coming out. You know, it's been a lot of vent up, you know, emotion for the last 24 hours. And
thank God
we
Duke
let it
didn't
out.
Lose.
Oh, yeah, I know. Duke's not good. Well, Duke's got a tough one today. Rhode Island's no joke.
Yeah, but again, at least it's after the show and it's 2:30.
And Virginia's already lost to a number 16 seed, so what am I going to say to you anyway?
Exactly.
You can join us in the text line at 802-655-6672, the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. And someone just texted me and said on the Town Fair Tire text line, well, at least UMBC won't beat the Yankees. again, glasses half full for that guy. So thanks a lot for that. Hey, NFL free agency is started up. It's rocking and rolling here.
Jeff, they heckle because they love, man.
It's all right. Listen, I get it. I understand it. I am heartbroken. I haven't slept.
Who sent that text?
I don't know.
They didn't put their name at all.
No, they didn't put
it
their
was
name
me.
On it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Typical.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Well, even better.
Good for us. All right. So let's get into the NFL. Interesting. I think the first week of a free agency has been intense.
Can we review that trade? Because, again, sure. I think that's huge. The Jets getting.
Yep.
So trading Jets, up to number three.
Yep, and the Jets are getting, hold on,
639-47?
The Jets have moved up to get the number three pick in the draft from the Colts, exchange for the Jets' number six pick, in addition to the three second-round picks.
In 2019.
So, yep, so this year the Jets get the third pick from the Colts, and the Colts will get the number six pick, the number 37 pick, and the 49th pick this year. And then next year they're going to get the second rounder from the Jets. So again, I mean, you know, if you're a Jets fan, are you happy with that? But I think if you're in this, but again, I wonder who the Jets want. I guess that's the question. Who are they going to get?
Baker.
Yeah, that's who they want. Baker Mayfield's going to be a New York Jet. That's exactly right. That's what they want. They want the quarterback. They didn't get Cousins. Cousins goes to Minnesota for a lot of money. And so they're going to get Baker Mayfield. I think that's a hell of a pick. I really do. I like Baker Mayfield. I like what I've seen out of him. He's athletic, dynamic, great personality. Obviously, he got a little edge to him. I think there was some comparisons to the old Johnny Football earlier just because of the actions on the football field in terms of personality.
Right.
In terms of kind of the outstanding stuff.
Well, I'll take the comparison on the field because he doesn't have the garbage off the field.
No, but I think there was some perception that he might because of some of the things that happened his senior year at Oklahoma. No question about that. But I think that'd be a great pick for the Jets. Jets fans, if you're listening, 655-6672, if that's what's happening here, if they're moving up to the three to get Baker Mayfield, who seems to be going up stock boards right now, draft boards, they're going. He's going up.
So if Cleveland takes Barkley, then what happens?
If Cleveland takes Barkley, I don't know. I mean, do the Giants look at any of these quarterbacks that are available and say, I'll tell you this, or do the Giants call the Jets and say, you know what, we like Baker Mayfield, and we're going to take Baker Mayfield. What do you want for the pick? And then you see what happens.
Well, but
of course, the Jets just gave everything away to the Colts, so maybe maybe you're not going to do that.
So I think either way that the Jets must love like a Rosen or one of the four quarterbacks.
But do they love those guys have come down? I can't. First of all, I think Cleveland's taking a quarterback. I can't imagine Cleveland going into this year after already getting rid of Kaiser and you're going to roll with Tyrod Taylor. That's going to be your future? Like, not happening. They brought Tyrod Taylor.
But I think they can still get a quarterback at four.
They very well.
And they don't need someone good enough to be a day one starter because Tyrod Taylor can play.
Understood. That's the point I'm saying. That's why you would get the best quarterback available. You might not be able to get him at four, Bernie. I mean, who says that? Maybe you don't get him at four.
Yeah, but if you can get Barkley, who is all that and a bag of chips, according to everybody, why wouldn't you take him first and then get the second?
Because I think Cleveland needs a franchise quarterback.
But there's three of them, four of them in the first round.
You don't know that. I think everybody thinks that Darnold is the guy, the kid from USC. I think they think he is the franchise quarterback. And if you believe that's your franchise quarterback, you got to get him. It's a quarterback-driven league. I mean,
right. But supposedly, like the Giants are in love with Rosen.
Yeah, you know, I don't believe everything.
So if it's Rosen, then Baker.
So hold on a minute. So we're talking the Giants. So in your thought process, the Browns take the running back.
Barkley.
The Giants take Rosen. The Jets take
Baker.
And then
they get Darnold.
They get not happening. Not happening.
Why is that not happening?
I think Darnold is going to be a Giant if he takes Barkley.
Okay.
I think that's what's going to happen.
Well, then maybe Rosen falls to four, and Rosen's really good too.
But I don't know if Rosen's the guy. Rosen is falling down the list here. But I know that he had a terrible combine. There's concern about him. a little bit in terms of his. I mean, I don't truly know enough about these guys.
All the more reason to trade the number two pick.
I don't know, but I don't. But you don't have to trade it today. You can trade it after you see who Cleveland takes. I mean, you have contingency plans here.
Of course.
Let's go through some of these situations. Let's look at the Patriots here. Signed Jeremy Hill, running back.
Okay.
Re-signed Rex Burkhead. Malcolm Butler gone.
That makes Brady very happy.
I'm sure. I'll tell you what doesn't make him happy is Deion Lewis gone.
But he was a big Rex fan.
Yeah, I know. That's true. But, you know. So anyway, I mean, Jason McCourty just signed. So he's with his brother now. They're trade.
Yeah, you're loving it. They traded, right? Yeah.
And then Danny Sheldon was just, okay, they just traded him. They got him on a third round pick via trade for a fifth. Okay, so yeah, I mean, the Patriots, I know that some of my friends were a little bit nervous with all the, you know, the offensive linemen going to the Giants and all these players leaving, but.
They lost Danny Amendola.
Amendola went to Miami. But again, I think if you look at, if you're a Patriot fan, you know, in Bill, you trust.
Right.
I mean, in Bill Belichick, you trust. I mean, I don't want to hear Patriot fan get on here and start freaking out because, you know, they're getting rid of these players. You got to look at it in terms of it's Bill Belichick.
And the defensive player that was hurt, who's coming back, their best defensive player. Come on.
Oh, the linebacker.
Yeah.
Hightower.
Thank you.
Yeah, Hightower's back. So. But what I say is, in Bill, you trust. Like, whatever Bill does, you just, whatever. You know, if Deion Lewis leaves, see you later.
He's doing it the Giant way.
Who knew Deion Lewis in the first place anyway? I mean, when people were saying Deion Lewis is going to be your guy, everyone's like, "Oh my God, who's Deion Lewis?" And then Deion Lewis is he turns into Eric Dor.
He was Dave Megan.
Yeah, he was Dave Megan. Oh no, there's no question. We know that. So anyway, the Patriots are moving all kinds of stuff here. The 49ers signed Richard Sherman, Jimmy Garoppolo, Jerick McKinnon. I mean, people like the 49ers. They think this is going to be like a worst to first type scenario here. People love Jimmy G. Jimmy G is the people. He better be good.
I mean, he looked good. He looked really good. Did you see that? Do you ever see that little thing, the recap that the NFL did on, I think it was YouTube, about like his last drive against the Titans where he talked to his receivers about plays beforehand and then it worked out the way he said afterwards. And they were talking about how he looked like Tom Brady. I mean, he looks good.
He does. And I think if you're a 49 fan, you get excited. But still, what's he played? Seven games?
And let's be serious right now. He still looks good from his trip to Florida with his tan. When it really counts, is Jimmy G going to be able to do it? I say yes.
Well, I love
what Lynch has done with that. He's bringing him back.
He is. But I will say this about Jimmy Garoppolo, and I'll say the same thing about Dak Prescott. Let the league see him a little bit, and then we'll see what happens.
And this is where we're going to agree to disagree.
Yeah.
Dak struggled because Zeke was suspended. And the offensive line was hurt. The pieces around him weren't as good as his first year.
You're only
as good as the people around you.
Bernie, I'm going to tell you right now, Dak Prescott. And again, I'll agree with you when they're healthy. But an elite quarterback and a difference making quarterback is able to do it no matter who's around you. You're an average quarterback if you have to have the best offensive line in the league and the best running back in the league to be successful. That's my point. That's why I get mad at Eli Manning. Eli Manning is an average quarterback because that's my point.
But why do you think that an average offensive line is acceptable?
I don't think it's acceptable. I don't. But
I mean, Aaron Rodgers, I think elite quarterbacks. Aaron Rodgers is elite of elite.
Yeah,
his team was banged up, offensive line, all that kind of stuff, and he still couldn't get it done.
Well, that's because he was hurt.
I understand, but in years past, two years ago.
Aaron Rodgers is always putting numbers up, whether they have a great
offensive line. And now that he's got Jimmy Graham, whoo-hoo.
Oh, look out.
Yeah.
But my point is, Dak, I don't want, maybe Dak's a little, I don't, maybe putting Dak Prescott, saying he's average is probably a little disrespectful, but I don't think Dak Prescott is an elite quarterback in this league. And I'm going to see, and we'll see what Jimmy Garoppolo is. But a great elite quarterback, which you need to have in this league, I think, to be able to sustain years of excellence, a.k.a. Tom Brady, a.k.a. Joe Montana, a.k.a. Troy Aikman, you have to be able to do
Troy
things.
Troy Aikman
is one of the greatest of all time.
Because look at who was around
him. It didn't matter who was around him, Bernie.
What do you mean it doesn't matter? He's got Hall of Famers galore around him.
I understand that, Bernie, but when push comes to shove, okay, I mean, I still think, but my point
I'm saying like Brett Favre.
Yeah, Bradford, another great one.
Right, who never had the best talent, and people kept giving him shots. He goes to Minnesota and
I mean, Troy Aikman is still one of the best. And again, you can say what you want about being around him, but again, he was an elite quarterback.
He was.
That won championships. No matter what was happening, he figured out a way to get it done.
Correct.
Okay, so yes. My point to you is, and we're going down this road here, whether who's better, Brett Favre, Troy Aikman, whatever, that's not the argument. The argument I'm saying is that Dak Prescott is not an elite quarterback. Just like Eli Manning is not an elite quarterback. So what I'm saying to you is, if you have great weapons, you make an average quarterback look elite. With less weapons, you make an average quarterback look average. Period.
And when you have no offensive line or no weapons around you,
yeah,
your ability to perform
not Aaron Rodgers, not Brett Favre, not Tom Brady.
Well, what? Okay, that's
okay,
fine.
Not Tom
you
Brady.
Name three.
Oh, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Okay, well, I'm okay. Did I say Joe Montana?
But
Steve Young.
Joe Montana, Steve Young. Those guys had Jerry Rice, Roger Craig.
Right,
but
not all the time. There were injuries in those situations. They were still elite quarterbacks. I'm just saying.
I just think if you look at the elite quarterback, they always have other types of pieces that are Hall of Fame material around them. Okay. I'm not saying they're not good, and I'm never going to diminish that.
Sure.
I'm just saying, you know, if you want to go out and play basketball and you have you, me, Rich, and Arnie, you're not going to be as good as if you had
I'm going to look good, though.
Right, you are, but you're not going to be as good as if you had Trey Belhanes, Drew Urquhart, Peyton Henson, and Ernie
Duncan.
That's
fine, Bernie, but what I'm going to but it was you, me, and Rich and Arnie, you would still be elite because you're a great basketball player. That's the point.
But we wouldn't get as far, and we wouldn't win as much because the talent around you might not be as good.
That may not be true, Bernie. That may be your ability might carry us to get at least farther than what we think. And that's what I'm saying about Dak Prescott and Eli.
We are missing the point. How about them Browns?
Yeah, the Browns look
beautiful. I mean, look at that.
Yeah, the Browns. Listen, good for the Browns. And I think, I told you guys just a month ago when we had our friend that works for the Cleveland Browns right now. You know, he's works in personnel.
Yeah.
That's a football team that's on the rise. That's elite defense, very good defense, ready to go. They're getting healthier. Now they're starting to get, you know, they got a new GM. They're starting to bring some pieces in. I'm not saying this team's going to be a playoff team, but I promise you, don't be surprised if the Browns are 500 next year. That team's coming.
Are the Browns, like San Francisco, making a lot of good moves on paper that we look at, but we don't know how it's going to come together?
Yeah, I mean,
I like what they're doing.
Sure.
I think what they're doing is great.
Sure.
They're trying to become relevant.
Yeah.
But will that happen?
Oh, no question. I think no question.
You think no question?
I think they're on the rise right now. I think they were on the rise late in the season last year. I think they were.
You just said they need a quarterback.
They have a solid enough quarterback to win games to get them to 500. We're talking about being relevant, Burn, not win a championship. We're being relevant. And Tyrod Taylor can do that.
But who's their elite player?
They got plenty. Well, you're looking at you got a difference maker in Jarvis Landry. You got a difference maker in Gordon, who's back. You just signed Carlos Hyde.
But Joe Thomas just retired.
No, I agree.
I still got a great offensive line. We got to take a second before we go to just laugh at the Dolphins for a minute. Like, I mean, what is this? They're just throwing talent out the window now.
It's hard.
But is that locker room management?
Sure. And how about this? How about we stop jumping on teams so we see what happens when it's all said and done? Like, let's wait and see how this thing goes before you jump on the Dolphins. Dominic and Sue's gone. That's a lot of money off, and it's probably a headache gone. Jarvis Landry gone. Good for them. I like to see the Giants do the same thing with Odell Beckham Jr. Trade him right now for a bunch of draft picks, and you'll have anything you want. Again, you can reload everything. You could take a bunch of stuff with Odell.
But you don't want to trade the number two pick for more?
I would much rather trade Odell Beckham Jr. than trade that second pick, especially if there's a chance to get that running back from Penn State. I'm just telling you right now.
That's where dreams are made of.
All right, we'll be right back. You know what that is. The greatest game show on the radio.
Ayo.
It's time for Hot or Not.
Hot or Not.
Take it away, Aaron.
I've got takes. You got to tell me whether they are hot or they are not. Take number one. Richard Sherman's comments on Pete Carroll the other day reflect more on himself than on Pete's coaching.
What were those comments?
I got them right here. He said things such as, hold on. Oh, I lost it. Hold on. Basically, he was talking about how the rhetoric that Pete Carroll gives the veterans in the locker room is recycled to the point where they could basically guess what he's going to say and say it before he does.
Yeah, that it got stale for the veterans. Okay. Got stale for the veterans. Yeah, I think that's not. I've never been a big Richard Sherman fan. I think that's just typical. You know, I mean, I'm not a big Seattle guy either. Anyway, but I think to say that is ridiculous. I think that, you know, Pete Carroll went to that organization, turned that organization around. Whether you like Pete Carroll or not, when he got to Seattle, they were going nowhere. Drafted well, won a Super Bowl. If it wasn't for a ridiculous call, would have won back-to-back Super Bowls. I think that's kind of ridiculous, and I think it's just kind of throwing salt on the wound to an organization that's going to be in a rebuild pretty soon.
I think it's hot because I think, you know, sometimes, especially at the professional level, after you've gone through rebuilding to success to the decline, the rhetoric can get old, and the longevity of a coach at that level, once you get over 10 years, I think becomes troubling.
Your job as an NFL player is to go win. You're a professional football player. That's your job, to go out there and get the job done and win.
Right.
You know, and whatever the, you know, and get done. So for Richard Sherman to walk out there and say that, oh, it was getting stale with Pete Carroll. Come on, Richard. I mean, come on. I mean, give me a break there. Like, I get it. And the mentality can get stale. But when you're a professional, you got to be a professional. And I think Pete Carroll's done a tremendous job there. And to kind of throw salt on Pete Carroll's wound there, as obviously they're going to be pretty close to rebuild.
He doesn't have a wound. He's still there.
No, he's still there against the coach's team. Now, listen, you can say what you want about Pete Carroll. I'm not condoning Pete Carroll at all, because you saw what he did to USC and got his, you know, he was all back and elbows out of there.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying here is I think what Richard Sherman did was just pouring salt on the wounds. But typical Richard Sherman.
Next.
All right. Number two, the Celtics have been masking the return of Gordon Hayward. He will be back in the rotation by April 10th versus Washington.
Don't take a chance. You're banged up. You got to get healthy, and no way.
I say hot. If the Celtics keep struggling the way they are, they need something to happen. They need a spark. If he's healthy and he's ready to go, Danny Ainge, take the reins off, baby. You're trying to win a championship.
Bring back Gordon.
I like it.
All right. Number three. Despite a strong combine appearance, Shaquem Griffin, the one-handed outside linebacker,
yep,
falls to round two in the draft, where he is taken by the Patriots, who trade up to get the 35 from the Browns. That may not be, I don't know about the trades, but to get a pick up there in the 35 range.
So the Patriots, and you're saying, is it hot or not, the Patriots are going to move up to get that kid if he falls to the second round?
Yes. And then the last stipulation, which is a little more, you can even do this separately. He has a great rookie year and makes defensive rookie of the year.
You want to take this first or me?
Sure. I'm going to say not on the first part, because I think he's a first round talent, and I don't think people would be afraid to take him. I could see the Patriots even taking him at 31. And I'm going to say hot to defensive rookie of the year, because I think he just has such energy, life, and so much to prove. I hope he hangs around so the Giants take him with the second pick of the second round.
Yeah, I mean, I say not in terms of him being a second round pick, because I think he's first round talent if you look at his game plan. But if he goes to the Patriots, yeah, of course, hot. Not only is he going to be the rookie of the year, he'll probably be the MVP. He'll be the greatest linebacker ever to live.
Stop.
And they'll have a big statue for him outside with Brady and Belichick. So hot, I'm all in that.
All right.
However, if he's a Giant, you know, he'll be traded. It'll be a terrible pickup, and you know, he'll be on the Philadelphia Eagles.
Come on, Gettleman's doing some good stuff.
All right, you're right. I like our guy Gettleman.
All right, number four. After a free agency which thus far has yielded Jarvis Landry, Tyrod Taylor, and Demaryius Randall, the Browns draft Saquon Barkley and not only make the playoffs but make it to the AFC Championship.
Wow, I'll take that one first this time. Okay, so I'm going to say not on getting the AFC Championship, but I'm going to tell you right now, this Cleveland Brown team is going to win it. They're going to be at least 500 this year, and if they do get this Barkley kid, hey man, why not? I mean, you know, you put that running back there with that quarterback, and Tyrod Taylor's a moving quarterback, young team. You now have a couple deep threats on that team with Gordon and Jarvis Landry. The defense is solid. The offensive line is solid. I mean, hey, why not? I'm mild on that.
Not. No, I just I love what they're trying to do. I think it's
rebuild.
Yeah, and I think they're trying to do all the right things. I'm just not drinking the Kool-Aid.
Speaking of hot or not, this room is hot or not. 3 minutes ago, I want to take my shirt off, and right now I need my jacket.
Thank God.
My
it's God. Cool.
Woo. It's going to thunder in here in a minute.
All right. So we're going to switch to the NCAA for 5, 6, 7, and 8.
How refreshing.
And 9, I think. All right. No number one seeds in the Elite Eight.
Oh, that's not. There's no question Villanova's going to be there. I think Xavier's got a good chance to be there. So I think that's not.
I will say not because Xavier will lose. Villanova will be there. Kansas is in trouble today against Seton Hall. And who's the fourth one? Who's the fourth? Oh, that's right. Virginia's out.
Yeah, that actually...
I'm not even going to say anything.
My original question was...
We don't need your original question.
The ACC we don't owns need all it. Four spots and we the NCAA don't need Final Four.
We don't need
it.
We don't need that.
So I had to cross that one out. All right. So far... Oh, I'm switching back to free agency. I'm sorry. I'm disorganized. So right. far, this is the most exciting NFL free agency in the last 5 years.
Hot because there's been a lot of action and a lot of movement. But again, let's see what really happens when they play.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd say hot. I mean, there definitely has been some movement. And it seems like there's a lot of really good players that have been released more than trades. You know what I mean? There's a lot of big names that are no longer on football teams. So that's been pretty interesting as well. So yeah, okay, we'll give you hot on that one.
Whew. All right. We got number 7. Number 9, Alabama will take down number 1 Villanova on Sunday.
Not happening. Alabama's not good enough. They're just not good enough. Virginia Tech gave that game away. Alabama's got a great player, one of the best players in the country. But Villanova's legit. And the other thing that Villanova has is they're veteran. People don't talk about it. There's something about teams that have seniors. Villanova has that. They will not allow what happened to them again, what happened for Virginia Tech against Alabama. I say it's not. Villanova moves on.
Not even getting into it. Because Villanova wins it all.
We've already heard that in the other question. So, number 8. Number 13, Buffalo will beat number 5, Kentucky today.
I could see that being hot. I mean, Buffalo can play. They defend well. They're athletic. Again, a senior-laden team. A team that can put the ball on the floor and they can get touches in the paint. They can shoot the ball from the outside. Kentucky has shown times where they can be special, but they also show times they show their youth. And I think what you saw against Davidson was a good example of that. I think by Buffalo can get this done today. I wouldn't be surprised.
Hot. I love Buffalo to win this game.
All right. And to end our little trio of upsets, number 8, Seton Hall defeats number 1, Kansas.
I am so hot on that. Kevin Willard, great coach, good guy. They match up really well with Kansas, and if Kansas doesn't have the big guy in the middle, that's got upset written all over it.
Yeah, I like that as well. I think Seton Hall is peaking, you know, and I got to tell you this too about the Big East. You got to give them some props. I've been down on the Big East all year, but that's some conference. I mean, you got to give them a lot of credit. There's a lot of talented teams in that conference.
Other than Creighton laying an egg.
Yeah, Creighton laid an egg, obviously, and then, you know, and Providence just couldn't get it done, you know, and I think Providence.
That's a bad matchup.
Understood. But again, you know, they got a shot today, and if Kansas comes out the way they did the other day, then there's no question Seton Hall could move on. Is that our hot or not again?
That is hot or not.
That was hot or not. All right. Another great segment of hot or not. That's going to be our game show every week. And next week, we're going to kick off another one, Bernie. We were going to talk about this off the air, but out in left field segment, we're going to start. We're going to come up with some funky stuff.
Isn't that this whole show?
Yes. This whole show has been out in left field. You're absolutely right. But that's going to start next week. So good job on your question. Did you write those questions or was it your lady helping you out?
She's 2 for 2.
Yeah, she wrote them all. I can't lie.
Hey, you know, by the way, it's St. Patrick's Day.
Who cares?
You know, I mean, big day.
Come on,
here,
man.
Patrick, you're not wearing.
I'm Polish, and if you need a holiday to have to go out and celebrate, that's amateur hour.
Listen, I mean, just because I understand for you guys, you know, you have Sundays and people eat this Polish sausage, like that's, you know, that's what you guys have. I mean, there's, you know, every, you know, so you have
the,
that
the
little,
big kielbasa
for the Irish. You know, you got to have one day, and I think it's pretty important because if I'm correct. St. Patrick is the one that led the snakes out of Ireland. And anyone that's leading snakes out of the areas where there are people, I'm all in for that. That's why I love St. Patrick's Day, because he's the guy that got rid of all the snakes. Speaking of snakes, I read another article this week about Thailand. This guy, they found this like 17-foot boa constrictor in the guy's wall. Can you imagine that? Like, he had been getting in and out of the house. And they finally figured out he was in the wall. I'm telling you, that's why I'm
that's,
all about
that's
St. Patrick's
scary.
Day. Can you imagine? That is just crazy.
17
huge
feet.
Snake, buddy boy, big snake. I mean, can you imagine? You're eating dinner, watching TV.
How much space is in between the wall?
They can get in. They can get small. Like, I'm telling you, and that's
how
another reason.
They
and again,
so what about the circumference?
I don't know much about them, but I saw it on. Listen, I'll show you the video.
No, I'm good.
All right, take a quick break. When we come back, we got to tie a bow on this show as St. Patrick leads all the snakes out of St. Patrick. Out of Ireland. I'm saying he's St. Patrick out of Ireland. We'll be right back. last segment here on 101.3 ESPN. It's Sports Saturday. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. Hope you have a great day. Be safe out there today if you're going to go out and partake in some St. Patrick's Day rituals. One of the things I used to like when I was in college was we used to have a bar that would open up early and get the green eggs. You get the green eggs and the Guinness and all that. We were at a place, and we were just in Key West. We were at a place called Irish Kevin's. If you ever go to Key West, you have to go to Irish Kevin's. They have a live Irish band in there all the time. And the owner sings Irish jigs. And what he would do is he would go out and he'd be up on the microphone. And when you walk in, he'd be like, hey, you know, where are you from? And we'd be like, Monica and I are like, Vermont. And then everybody says something like, I don't want to say it on the air because they're just swearing. But anyway, it's really cute. But anyway, and then he'll call people up periodically and he takes a pint of Guinness and he puts, you know, the shot of Irish whiskey in it. And the goal is for the person to drink that pint within 2 to 3 seconds. If you do it in 3 seconds, everybody in the bar gets their drinks for free.
The Irish car bomb?
It's an Irish car bomb, yes. But can you imagine having to do that in 3 seconds? So people are trying.
Yes.
I got to tell you. Some of these guys, there was one guy that did it in 4 seconds, which was insane. Insane, you know? And these guys did a good job. I kept looking away whenever you'd look around. I'm like, do not put me up there. Because first of all, I will never do it.
You would have crushed it.
Not a chance.
Yes.
Listen to me. I don't think I could drink milk in 3 seconds. Okay? So there's no. I am not drinking an Irish car bomb in 3 seconds. Not even close. But anyway, it's a great place to go down in Key West. If you're ever down there, go check that place out. So you don't have any. You're wearing your blue today.
245.
Yeah, 245, your Blue Devils. But first, I saw the list your wife left you. You have got your hands full before 245, pal.
Yep. She is gone for the day, and I have to do a little bit of the heavy lifting at Costco and Shaw's and a little laundry and, you know.
You need a PhD to read those lists. And for the record, these lists, okay, they're pre-made. They're computerly made. They're obviously, they're made on paper. They're printed out. The Supliki list.
Yeah.
And you had your list checked off, things that you need to get.
It's like Christmas.
I'm telling
taking
you.
Taking my list, checking it twice.
And you got to go to Costco.
Well, you know, I'm busy.
It's a good time to go to Costco now, though, because this is when the samples are out. You don't go to the
I got in and out, man. I got to hustle.
Come on.
I got to hustle.
Come on,
man.
Now stop it. Now stop. You're walking around, you're going to tell me you got a little chicken breast sandwich going over there. You're not going to stop over a little bite.
I'm not afraid to partake.
And then you go down a little bit more and they got like this new cheese on a cracker. You're not going to have a couple of those.
It'll be all right.
A couple of hot dogs and barbecue sauce. Hey guys, we're Sports Saturday.
One past Wilkins.
God, I'm so annoyed with you two. Hey, congratulations to the UMBC Retrievers beating my Cavaliers. Unbelievable. Hey, it's Sports Saturday. We're here every Saturday from 10 a.m. to noon on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. I apologize for how crazy this show was. A lot of emotion out of Bernie and I. We'll be back next week at the same time getting it done. Have a great week. Be safe tonight and enjoy the tournament if you can.
Go Duke.